Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
So we have Manchester United, PSG, it's Old Trafford. Kenny Cunningham's here in studio. We will also check in with Simon Cooper over in Paris. It seems they're not going so well of late, to say the least. Paul Keoghan's a remarkable fella. He's a Paralympian. His life has taken a fairly remarkable turn over the past decade after an innocuous elbow to the head when he was playing GAA at the age of 16. And since then, it's been, remarkable. He's in the studio just after 8 o'clock. We'll talk to David Priest as well about Gordon Banks, who sadly passed away aged 81. 53106 is the text number. We are at Off the Ball on Twitter. Kenny, hello.
Evening, Joe.
Richie, hello.
Hey, Joe.
Banks' save against Pele. It's worth just mentioning that now, isn't it? Right off the top.
Oh, yeah. It still stands up, doesn't it? You know, the old footage you look back at, particularly kind of goalkeeping saves, but generally speaking, it's great, it's nostalgia, but there's always that bit of a hint you look back and think, oh.
It doesn't hold up.
Yeah, exactly. Particularly goalkeepers, for whatever it is, you know what I mean? I never see too many old goalkeeping saves where I think, oh my God, that's De Gea like, or, for that reason. But
Sage badly that,
but I think that particular save just stands out. And even now, looking out for the, I obviously can't look for the first time, but young kids now look at that save now would still, I remember the first time I saw it, I literally looked at it and thought, wow.
If you look behind you, I know you're not going to take it down now, that World Cup 90 album that you have there, yeah. Phil pointed this out to me earlier on, there is a section in that look back on like great goals of the World Cup. And as far as I know, the only great moment that they look back on that wasn't a goal was Banks' save in Guadalajara against Brazil from that Pele header. And they go through it in diagram form to show you how it was made. Such was the kind of impact that save had. And even today, watching it back, like you mentioned, like, does it hold up? We're used to the TV footage, I guess, of the save of the match itself. FIFA, I don't know if they put it out today, they must have done, where it's footage from their actual film. So it's the same kind of camera angle, but it's set back a little bit and it's much clearer. And with the clearer picture, it actually looks a much better save than you originally think it was watching the TV footage. It's just phenomenal.
Yeah,
it's absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, the athleticism, and it looked as if it was literally behind him, almost physically impossible. I'm not claiming, I don't think he ever claimed, I've listened to a few quotes from today, I don't think he ever claimed he went there with the intention of flicking it. It was almost instinctual. Can I actually get anything on this ball? You know what I mean? Can I keep it out? Anyhow, the fact obviously it went over the bar seemed absolutely impossible where he actually made the contact on the ball. But,
well, he said he thought it was in.
Yeah.
When he flicked the ball and then obviously he rolls down, he thought, that's a goal.
Yeah.
And then he said, I saw the ball bounce behind the goal. And I thought, Banks, you lucky bastard. That was his line that he had.
Oh, certainly wasn't. Yeah, luck doesn't come in. Like I said, the actual athleticism to get across, the instinct, you know what I mean? To get his hand out there and strong wrist, the whole thing. But it's the only, like you say, Rich says, it's the only save. You could have put me on the spot now. Think of another save, World Cup, European Championships. Big. I'm really struggling. Mm.
Yeah. There have been good ones, but it's the one that genuinely and for good cause sticks in the sticks.
What was the actual moment in the game? Was it nil all in the end? The significance of it in terms of where it was in the actual tournament?
I don't know. Actually.
I know it was obviously Brazil.
I think it was still very much in the balance. Yeah, it was in the first round of the tournament. It was in the group stage. There's a brilliant story that he has in his autobiography where he's speaking about later on in the tournament. Obviously, he'd gotten food poisoning and Peter Bonetti had taken to the nets for the game against Germany. And he was laid up in hospital watching the game. And the game where he was watching it was on an hour's delay. And he's sitting there watching the game. England are 2-0 up. And next thing, the squad arrive in. And they're all kind of glum-faced. And he's like, oh, lads, come on, you're having me on here. And they're like, no, we lost 3-2. He's like, I know what, seriously, what's happening? He's like, no, we lost 3-2.
Yeah.
David Priest obviously is a real goalkeeping expert, you know. And so he's going to join us in the football show for a couple of minutes just to assess how good Banks was. And he was chatting to JP outside earlier and he was saying to JP he thinks Banks is the first modern goalkeeper in the way he went about his business.
Yeah.
He was also a bit of a trendsetter in that he was one of the first who was actually taller than average. There was a real period where goalkeepers were just, you know, you're 5'9", 5'10". Whereas you look back at, you know, pictures of the 66 team and he's towering above them. He's that 6'2", 6'3" kind of guy. Which was also a bit of a prototype. And then the agility was very impressive as well, especially for the era. There was a guy, Lee Marlowe, who tweeted earlier on today. He interviewed Gordon Banks years ago. And he told Banks that his son played in goal as well. And so Banks sent him a letter with some advice. And even this is quite innovative, especially of its time. So he said, play with a smaller ball. Playing with a bigger one will seem much easier if you've been used to playing with a smaller one. Play a lot of games like table tennis. It will help sharpen up your reflexes, your hand-to-eye coordination. Throw a tennis ball against a wall and catch it. All of this kind of stuff. Mm. He gave a big paragraph to this journalist's son. So he was a very modern practitioner.
Innovative, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I've heard some people, because I haven't seen that many games. I've seen a couple of the same, obviously we spoke about, a couple of little snippets, but it's just before my time. I wouldn't have seen a huge amount of them play, so it's secondhand, people talking about them. But that seems to be a common theme today in terms of his kind of professionalism, how he, deep thinker, thought about the game, and quite innovative in terms of how he actually
prepared,
how he prepared and trained. Yeah,
yeah.
So I came back from David being blind in one eye as
Did he come back?
He came, like, it
happened. I thought his career was ended by
The accident happened in 72, and he decided to take the move. I think it was 5 years later, I think it was 77. He went off to Fort Lauderdale in the NASL.
Okay.
And they'd offered him a contract, and he was like, all right, let's see if I can do it. And part of that saw him come back here and play one game for St. Pat's. They had him in goal at Richmond Park against Shamrock Rovers. It's a great story. Darren Cleary from Off the Ball retweeted out the actual newspaper article about it from the time in 77, came back and played one game here. And he did it, he says, just to prove it to himself that he could still go out there and play at a certain level with a certain level of fitness, and that he could basically come back from losing an eye, which is a quite incredible thing. And speaking as somebody who can only see out of one eye, that is remarkable that you can play goalkeeper at any level. And do quite well. So for him to go off to the NASL and do it like he did was brilliant.
Yeah, okay. So that's coming up on the football show. David Priest will join us. Let's put Manchester United fans out of their misery if they're looking for team news.
Yeah, United hoping to make a first step towards the Champions League quarter-final in 5 years. It will be their first quarter-final in 5 years tonight. They play host to a Paris Saint-Germain side ravaged by injuries, with neither Neymar nor Edinson Cavani available to them. The teams are as follows. David Gea starts in goal for Manchester United. A back four then of Ashley Young, Victor Lindelof, Eric Bailly and Luke Shaw. In midfield, it's Nemanja Matic, Ander Herrera and Paul Pogba, with Anthony Martial and Jesse Lingard helping out Marcus Rashford in the front three. For PSG, it is Gianluigi Buffon in goal for them. Thilo Kehrer, Thiago Silva, Presnel Kimpembe and Juan Bernat in their back four. Across the midfield for them then, you have Dani Alves, Marquinhos, Marco Verratti and Julian Draxler, with Angel Di Maria helping out up front. Kicks off at 8 o'clock.
It could still be a 4-3-3, but it has the look of a 4-2-3-1 PSG, which is not their norm. And most papers had it pegged that it would be that earlier on this afternoon. As for Manchester United, Bailly and Lindelof.
Oh yeah, but it's exactly the team Manchester United supporters, I'm sure, would have wanted to see. Because when you think United the 6 weeks were ever under Solskjaer, you immediately look at the last order of the pitch, the personnel high up the pitch, and it's all about the combination play for me between Martial, Rashford and Lingard. They've been absolutely key, which obviously Pogba as well, coming from that deep line position, that's been fundamental to Manchester United's success. Yeah, the defensive line have looked reasonably solid. I'd still be a little bit nervous. Boye in that central position, Cavani getting off his shoulder. Yeah. He's a clever operator, Mbappe. It's not just about, you know, how quick he is, the timing of his runs as well. He's a smart young kid as well. So I'd be a little bit uneasy there. But in terms of United in possession going forward, I mean, that's, for me, this is the first game under Solskjaer where it really feels that the United crowd can really make a difference. I think they've really been getting behind the team. Some of the away support's been great. You can feel it. They've really been energised with the performances of the team. But this is the first game for me I really feel as if the United support can really get on board tonight and really drive the team forward.
Well, look, you can pinpoint where it started to end for Mourinho, and that was at this stage of the competition last year against Sevilla, when they were insipid in the first leg away, and then Paul Pogba was dropped in the second leg, and it was like an attitude of containment at Old Trafford, and they got what they deserved. So it's completely different here. Kenny, you love a quiz. Solskjaer, one of three managers left in the Champions League.
Not football trivia, I don't.
One of three managers left
in the
Champions League who has won the competition as a player. Come on then.
You want to know the other two?
I think that was implied, yeah.
Did Solari win it as a player?
Oh, that's one.
Good man.
And the
you praise peacocking already at that one.
No.
That was a great shout. I thought that's the harder of the two.
Guardiola.
Kenny, full house.
Oh my God, that was too obvious.
Bit of a bus.
Well done, there you go.
Yeah.
Thank you long enough.
I'm not football trivia. It's just.
Then why do you look so happy with yourself?
I really do look so pleased.
I thought Joe was better than that.
Sorry.
How long have you had to prepare for this show? That's all you can come up with.
3 days. That was the best one. Right, so we'll talk more about that game, 7:30. We'll really get stuck into it, and Simon Cooper will join us as well. Elsewhere, Rich, where are we going?
Tonight's other game in the last 16 is a first leg encounter of last year's semi-finalist Roma. They entertain Porto, and both games have 8 o'clock starts tonight. Football, as we know, is united in tribute to World Cup winner Gordon Banks, who died earlier this morning at the age of 81. The man between the posts for England's famous 1966 victory would 4 years later pull off what's still regarded as one of the World Cup's finest saves when he denied Pele from a header. Pele himself said of that save today, "I'm glad he saved my header because that act was the start of a friendship between us that I will always treasure." Banks played nearly 300 games for Leicester, almost 200 for Stoke, and line out, as I mentioned, for St. Patrick's Athletic for one lone game at Richmond Park in 1977. He was widely regarded as one of the game's finest ever stoppers and was FIFA's goalkeeper of the year on 6 separate occasions. Peter Shilton played with Banks at both Leicester and England.
You know, he worked very hard at the game. You know, in the days when there was no goalkeeping coaches, and sometimes a goalkeeper would have to go stay behind for 5 minutes after training or 10 minutes and get some lads to stay with them just to do a bit of shooting and crossing. Gordon used to go back Tuesday and Thursday afternoons and do extra training. So that was his dedication, and that obviously enabled him to make the sort of saves that, you know, he made against Pele.
There you go, Peter Shilton speaking about the late Gordon Banks. England's Grand Slam hopes have been dented with the news that Mako Vunipola has been ruled out for the rest of the Six Nations. The Loosehead suffered an ankle ligament injury in Sunday's 44-8 victory over France at Twickenham. Vunipola put in a man of the match performance in England's 32-20 victory over Ireland nearly a fortnight ago now. And England's next game in the Championship season face Wales in Cardiff on February the 23rd. Sticking with the motif of injuries in the Six Nations, Wales number 8 Talupe Faletau has been ruled out of their entire Six Nations campaign. The 28-year-old hasn't played since sustaining a fractured arm while playing for Bath last month. That game was Faletau's comeback from a broken arm. Bath have confirmed that Faletau has undergone surgery to resolve the problem. In better news for on Gatland's side, Lee Halfpenny is nearing a return for the first time since November. The Scarlet's fullback hasn't played since suffering a head injury in Wales' 9-6 victory over the Wallabies in Cardiff. Wales play host to Ireland in the tournament's final round on March the 16th.
A few players now like Faletau keep breaking their arm.
Breaking and re-breaking.
Billy Vunipola, 3 arm breaks in a year. Mm. Now, one of them was on the other arm. But I don't know, is it a technique thing or is there some...
It's going to be a technique thing, but the sheer brute force that's involved in some of the tackles.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say technique, maybe.
I'm surprised it hasn't happened more, if I'm being quite honest. But the breaking and re-breaking is definitely something that's particularly unfortunate.
Because Gordon Darcy broke his arm and it was very serious and very difficult to come back from. He came back in 09, from memory. But it was a really long road, you know. It's not as straightforward as it was when we were kids. You know, everyone breaks their arm as a kid once, somewhere along the way.
You wouldn't want any type of weakness. They generally, I smashed my wrist when I was 18 and stuff. So I was a little bit, I haven't got kind of full confidence in it, but obviously I wouldn't be, you know, I wouldn't be playing
rugby off Richie to the face.
Yeah, the level they play, you just can't, you know, can't have any type of weakness there, like, particularly, you know what I mean, it's particularly in certain areas of the pitch. I mean, are they the only team really who can beat, I mean, that fella told that injury to, I mean, they're the only team really that can beat England, aren't they?
Yes.
Realistically.
Yes. Yeah. Well, England have, this is the next game for them, Cardiff. Which is the big thing.
In Cardiff.
Yeah.
So this is that's it really. That's
this is it.
All or
nothing. Then they have Italy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
so
then they
forget
have
it.
Scotland
forget it,
at Murrayfield. The last time Scotland beat England at Murrayfield, Kenny, was? Have a punt.
I'd say about 25 years ago.
1983.
Give or take. Yeah.
Give a bit more. But yeah, no, it's not bad. It's not bad.
They got no chance. Although I thought he'd run all the way against first half. I thought he'd. But went to pieces second half, Scotland.
Did, yeah,
I mean, if England
put
this squeeze on them, like, forget
it. I don't think we're relying on Scotland at Twickenham. Right, so the launch. Oh, yeah. Was there something?
There is. Let me get to it.
The amount of screw-ups, the amount of screw-ups this lot must make that we never hear about.
Literally not a ball kicked in anger yet. And we've already had the first balls up from the FAI of the new season.
Can you imagine, though, seriously? So, sorry, okay, people might not see this, so we'll get to it. But, like, when you just hear this, and they have so many of these little things, can you imagine the 99% of nonsense that must go on in this iceberg of crap?
Yeah. Just for those who might have missed it.
Including myself.
Including yourself. The launch of the new SSE or Trissy League season was held at the Aviva Stadium today with representatives of all the clubs present. And there was FAI Director of Competitions Frank Gavin, who had this announcement of a new cross-border Clash of the Champions.
Well, I suppose it's something over the years the clubs have been saying to us, is there any chance of the Satanta Cup coming back? Because that's what it was known as. And I think this initiative was between the FAI and the IFA. And it'll be, initially it'll be the champions and for the first couple of years, 4 years, and it may grow, we don't know, but I think it's just welcome that it's a welcome return for it, and I think it's good to see it, really is. Yeah.
So, Clash of the Champions, League of Ireland winners play the winners North from North up north, winners, it's yeah. like a showpiece kind of game.
Yeah, super, an Ireland of Ireland Super Cup.
Great, okay.
Fantastic
Good.
News.
Lovely.
Those words had barely left Gavin's mouth when the Northern Ireland Football League were pouring cold water on the notion. They released a short statement this afternoon which said that they were aware that initial discussions had taken place between the Irish FA and the FAI but did not expect any formal announcements at this stage. We look forward to consultation and receiving further detail regarding this opportunity, which we will consider with our club members.
Like, how do you get that stuff from?
Ah, yeah. No, okay. Ah, lads, you're giving this to... No, you're too down on that. No, so what, no. Fram maybe he's jumped the gun a little bit, like, you know what
he's
I mean?
He's jumped the gun with loads of details.
It's not as if the Northern Irish House have come out and said they have no knowledge whatsoever of this. Wow. It's just suddenly, you know what I mean?
No,
pull
sorry.
The rabbit out of us.
Sorry,
that.
Kenny. You're, it's just
nah,
the
Joe,
latest
no.
in a long line...
No, you're too hard there.
...of cock-ups. And do, no, you, do, you know no. what, do you know what the issue with it is? The issue with it is, it just hints at the wider problem of complete mismanagement.
Like, oh, no, that's no, it. No, you're jumping too way.
I don't think so. It's not that hard to get it right or wrong.
Dan McDonald tweeted earlier on saying, it's almost like the cross-border announcement today was an attempt to inject some fresh news into a stale launch. A distraction from the fact that prize money is the same and the new TV deal equals 1 week good followed by 5 weeks bad, which is essentially what we have. They start off with Dundalk and Sligo this Friday and then there is 5 weeks of fallow TV action.
Oh, no TV.
Well, that's a different topic of conversation.
But these are the corners for the FAI to fight rather than looking for a cross-border competition.
Yeah, no, I agree with you there. Yeah, the underlying problems within the game, but in a standalone and saying that people thought, we've got to make it a bit more interesting. You know, we're going to improve the product, etc. I don't think. I know it's not original in terms of the league winners in the Republic playing the winners in the North, but you know, I don't think it's the worst idea in the world. And when you initially said it, I thought, oh, yeah, I'd watch that. Yeah. You know, the winners from the North again, one-off game, whenever it would be, I don't know, before the season starts.
October, you're saying, once our season ends.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, yeah.
No, the idea is good.
Yeah.
Why commit and announce it before it's even
agreed? Oh, come on, yeah. Joe. It might be a little bit of that, yeah, throwing something in there might just grab the attention, you know, but...
Or distract
too harsh.
As I said... No.
Hardly going to distract, like, people aren't going to forget about
it's all we're talking about.
The fundamental.
That's what we're talking about. It's worked. It's worked to be.
You're not talking about. You're talking,
talking
it down.
About.
You're talking it down is
no,
what
I'm
you're
not
doing.
Not talking
Get
down.
It in writing.
It's a good idea. I'm
Get
just,
it in writing.
Just saying
right.
It is the latest in a long line of small little cock-ups. Just no attention to
you're
detail.
You sound a bit bitter and twisted there, Joe. I don't know why, like. I don't know where you're coming from.
I don't like the way they're doing a lot of their business.
I can understand that bit. Are you talking about the League of Ireland in general?
It's everything to do with the FAI.
It's the direct... Kenny, in the most basic terms... This is the director of competitions getting the fact that a competition has been signed off upon.
No, Kenny doesn't care.
I don't think he went quite as far as to say this is in stone, it's going to happen on such a day.
He literally did.
I think he more or less said, yeah, this is in process, we hope it's going to happen. To a large extent, it probably will. It might well happen.
Oh, no, look, I'm with you. It really inspires confidence. I'd say they're nailing all the details. And just my point is, think of... This is only the little bits that you know about. Look at the dispute with the players' union a while back. Shambolic.
They're in the same building.
An embarrassment, honestly. Yeah. And so it's just...
No, I know what you're saying. I understand where you're coming from there.
And the way like they quelled a rebellion with the Mick, Stephen, Kenny... arrangement.
Yeah, but I think, look, if that's I take your point, but for me, too much focus at times on the negative slant. For me, League of Ireland starts next weekend, and I'm looking at the teams in terms of the business that's been done during the summer. I'm thinking, woof, this could be the best championship for quite some time.
Honestly, we were talking about this outside as well earlier on this afternoon. It's going to be the most competitive top
four
that we've seen in the last 5 years.
Yeah, absolutely. So, for me, there's not enough talk about that in terms of, I'd expect Pats look to be in a good position, strong position to challenge this season. Rovers have done their business. Wouldn't say question marks about Dundalk, but is everybody looking at the Dundalk in terms
you've
of Stephen's
departure? You've reason to question them for the first time.
We've yeah, exactly. So you feel as if there's you can have a conversation in terms of, like, there's going to be a real championship this year. There's going to be a lot of talking points, a lot of stories in terms of players coming and going, players coming back from England. There's plenty of good stories there for me in terms of being positive. I'm not just talking about being positive for the sake of it, Joe. I understand the points that you're making, but at the same time, I think there's reasons to be optimistic and to be encouraged going into the season.
I agree with that. That's a separate issue.
Yeah. So we're agreed on that.
We're agreed on that.
Something which might interest Kenny more. Dundalk first team coach John Gill was one of those to speak to around Stephen Doyle this afternoon, and Gill says perhaps the double winner's key signing of the off season was keeping hold of the recently retired Stephen O'Donnell.
Obviously, he's come in as a recruitment and our scout. He's a great knowledge of the game. Stephen goes and watches opposition teams that we're going to play. He also has a big say and a big help in recruitment when we identify players, doing background checks and going and watching them and getting as much information on them as we can. He's probably one of the best, probably the most respected player in the league. His trophy haul is probably second to none. But the good thing about it, he's such a nice guy as well. And he, you're right what you say, the players in Dundalk totally respect him. The respect that he's held in is, I can see why, you know, why they respect him for what he's done. He's still part of the group. Players know that. And I think the players are in a good place as well with it. I'm glad that Stephen didn't go elsewhere. I'm glad that he decided to stay with us, because I think we've built up a really good management structure there at the moment. It's helped the transition. It's been seamless. Again, that will be proven in the next few months with results, because it's a result-driven business. But I think we're in a good place.
So Vincent says he was privileged to have been at Richmond Park the day when Banks played for St. Pat's against Shamrock Rovers. I can still remember a wonder save he pulled off from Eamon Dunphy, who lashed a rising volley from the edge of the box, and Banks got up to tip it away for a corner. Brilliant, says Vincent.
Yeah, the tales you hear from behind the goals, everybody presumed that was in from Dunphy.
Is there footage of that?
And Banks saved it. I don't think so, no. There's extensive match reports. I think they got a record crowd in at Richard for that. They got like 5,000 plus in on the day.
Right.
And pretty much everybody was just there just to see Banks.
On the Pele save, Denny Ryan on Twitter. The pass down the wing, though. Carlos Alberto outside of the right foot, I think.
The pass down the wing.
Yeah,
for Jairzinho, yeah.
And even the cross, that ball was seriously bobbling. He just catches it almost, I mean, it's almost halfway up his shin, and it's a fantastic cross as well.
Yeah.
It would have been an amazing goal.
That tournament, I don't remember that tournament in 1970, but again...
Sure you do, Kenny, come on.
Oh, my God. But the thing, we're talking about the old kind of grainy pictures, but there's something in particular about that World Cup. What I don't know if because the save happened during that particular World Cup. I don't know why it was.
World Cup.
70 Brazil, that Brazilian team, the save happened against... that Brazilian team, some of the moments they provided in that tournament, particularly in the final, the goals, just by, you're talking about Alberto, the goal he scored in the
LA
final, the
move,
and the strike, that daisy cutter into the, all of those things, I don't know where subconsciously they're
the
all playing it. It's part in the actual Banks, how people perceive the Banks save as great as it was.
It's iconic. It's part of iconic.
If that happened in Germany, say if that had happened in the World Cup in Germany in 74, I'm not saying it wouldn't have been a world-class save, but do you know what I'm saying?
Such a glamour about the
thing. Yeah, absolutely.
70 was the first World Cup to be broadcast in colour to where it was available, obviously enough. And it was the first World Cup, as far as I know, that was broadcast in the main live, regardless of the time difference. Because 66, a lot of it was on delayed footage, a lot of it was still newsreel stuff, and a lot of it wasn't necessarily live on TV, where 70 did.
Oh, right, wasn't aware of that.
Something very vibrant about the colours in 70 as well. You know,
The colour is new. Brazil are playing yellow and blue. It's just the real lushness of the Azteca turf as well. It's just my guess.
Yeah. Lads, a listener in TalkSport this morning was going to Goodison Park. The pack train stopped at Crewe. Banks got on. The listener gave him his seat. He said you could hear a pin drop except for Gordon telling stories, says the Walkinstown Beckenbauer. England lost that match 1-0 anyway, says Pat.
Yeah, was that it? Yeah, I knew that. Yeah.
He said similar save was Pat Jennings against England in Wembley back in the 70s, if you can find it.
Schmeichel made one against Rapid Vienna while playing for Manchester United as well, which is very similar to the Banks when I got compared to it at the time, to mid-90s.
Guys, get it correct, please. Scotland beat England last year at Murrayfield. This year's match is at Twickenham, says Aidan. Did we not say that?
No, this is purely, don't bring we into it.
Huh?
You
said it was at Murrayfield.
You bossed the conversation about
well.
The rugby.
You said, Joe Malloy said
Murrayfield.
It was at Murrayfield.
Oh, slip of the tongue.
Do you ever notice that when there's a mistake Twickenham, made Twickenham. Live on air, Joe naturally tries to involve? Yeah, it's definitely, without a doubt.
We're sorry, Aidan, is the point.
Shocking, baby.
No, definitely
Twickenham. I love the Banks stuff. I love that. It's of its time. It's not just Banks. We hear all the players who played of that generation, particularly the higher profile players. That kind of connection with they had with the supporters, it's I love hearing stories like that. I mean, it's a bygone age, I know it's a bit of a cliche, but it is. It's a bygone even the letter which he wrote to that particular kid, giving a little bit of information and trying to help him out. It's great, you know what I mean? We don't hear too much of that in the modern game. It's an absolute shame. That kind of connection between supporters and players, it's to a large extent, it's just gone.
You're a man of the people. When you get on Dublin Bus with your Leap card, do you not regale them with tales of Roy and Saipan? Gather around, everyone.
Me, because I can never. When I put the pass on there, I'm always a little bit. Has that beeped? It's never. You need to turn the decibel level up on there. I'm never quite. I always linger too long, so invariably there's people behind shuffling.
Do you ever think then?
I annoy people.
Do you ever
on the
think I've been charged
pass.
Twice? I've left it on too long. What if you're getting done twice?
I can't get done. You have to literally physically have to lift it up and put it back to get done.
No, Kenny. Sometimes you might leave it too long.
Although I can't complain.
It doesn't just keep charging you as soon as you leave it on there. It's like whittling your
card. I can't play with them.
But I'm always...
Why can't you call it a leap card? Why do you have to call it a pass for? It's not a pass.
It's a bus pass.
You're not 65. It's a leap card.
Is he not?
It's a leap card.
Bus pass. It's bus pass. It's not hard to remember. It's coming to change now.
You love it though, don't you? You love your leap card.
It was great. I didn't make it. I argued against it. I resisted
you hate modern technology,
My ma went and got me one. That was literally it.
Did she sign you up?
She put them front. Yeah, she got me one.
Why? What were you? You were getting caught with only notes, probably, were you? Or no?
No, coins. I was just going through it. I just couldn't be. Paraphernalia. If I just get me coins out, bang, and you're on there. But I was getting into those situations where I'm short. I was having to go in and get some change. Yeah, break a tenner, pack a chewing gum, or something or other. You know.
Then you miss your bus.
Yeah, it's just, change. Exactly. Just became a bit of a nuisance. I knew it, but I didn't want to admit to it. You know, you go so far with something, you think, right, a point of principle, I'm not going to back down on this. Yeah. So I literally led me ma to put it in my pocket, and I'm not taking that. I'm not doing it. Oh, go on then.
And have you told her, ma'am, thanks?
I have, begrudgingly. Begrudgingly.
Yeah. Lads, Gordon Banks, Pele and Eamon Dunphy in the same conversations as Paul and Kilkenny. Yeah, there you go.
That's a great memory for people. No, you mentioned it, Rich. I wasn't even aware that you played that moment. But yeah, great for other people. I know you said the reasons that he did it in terms of, but to actually come and do it in Dublin, in terms of the people in the ground, even if it wasn't on, and I was saying, oh, was it on? We can all look at it on TV. But the fact that it wasn't on TV for me, it wasn't on TV. Yeah, exactly. For those people there, paid their money, came in and actually... saw that. What a moment. What a moment for them.
Who was the most dominant keeper you came up against?
Fattest, you mean? What are you talking about?
Dominant.
Brian Horn was the fattest goalkeeper. No, but I played with in terms of carrying a bit.
Or against. I guess I'm asking with an answer in my mind. I'm asking with an answer in my mind.
I thought you were being smart there.
Because I felt at the 2002 World Cup there was something almost supernatural about Oliver Kahn. You know? He was just saving everything.
Yeah, I didn't like it, just ahead of him. I just couldn't take to Oliver Kahn. It was something. No, I couldn't.
What's wrong
with him? It's a funny one, isn't it? Yeah, just some people, just the look of them, isn't it? Just ahead of him, I could never. He is a good goalkeeper, don't get me wrong, but. No, if you're talking about dominant.
Sorry, hang on.
Is it wrong that
let's just leave it there. I don't want to go into that. I don't want to go
there. Or was it his behaviour?
Yeah, his hair a little bit, just that demeanour, that really miserable moaning. The hair, there was something just couldn't take to him, like.
Okay.
Yeah. So I wouldn't, very good keeper as he was, I don't think him dominant in terms, physically he didn't strike me as the most imposing. Kahn, I wouldn't say he was much more 6'1".
Yeah.
Whereas the likes of, you know, the usual suspects, Schmeichel was obviously the one for me. I'm trying to think around, back in my day, different types of goalkeepers back then in terms of didn't have the physical condition and that type, but that came a bit later. Czech, when he first came on the scene for me, was probably one of the first in terms of real athletic. Real athletic build, imposing, but not, you know, really kind of defined, you know, that kind of modern era of goalkeeper. Mm. Although I've got some sympathy for him because I feel as if after the injury, the head injury, which he saw, I never felt he was the same. I always felt as if he was never as imposing, never kind of dominated his box. After the injury, as he did before, shot stopping agility was great.
Yeah.
But for me, he was never quite the same after that. As good a goalkeeper as he was, but I'm going to mention Shea, you know, because we're talking about easy keeper, 6'4", big shoulders, dominant. But Shea was a little bit different, probably not the most physically imposing, but he was a great keeper to play behind, vocally, good information, quick off his line. Sensible in terms, not coming for every single cross, but...
Do you know, on that point, and I'm nitpicking here because Given was obviously a fantastic goalkeeper, but Ryan Giggs was doing the thing with Gary Neville where he sits there and they watch matches back from the past, you know?
Yeah.
And there was some match against Given where Giggs was obviously playing in the wing and he was putting in crosses and Given came up between them. They were just chatting and Giggs just said, yeah, you know, it was always... I liked playing against Given Maybe liked is a bit strong, what he said. I don't want to misquote him. Yeah. But anyway, look, he said against Given, the thing with Given was when you were putting in crosses, you never had to worry about him coming for them.
Yeah.
So he was like, you know, there was such a, some keepers were so good at coming for crosses, you really had to be careful where you put the ball. Where he says, yeah, but Given, you could almost put it in 3 yards out from the goal line and someone could come and attack it. So if there was a criticism.
I think that'd be a little bit harsh. I think it was very selective, Shay, in terms of the crosses that he came for. And I think that that was a practical consideration. Shay coming, like you said, he hadn't got the height in terms of he 6 or 4 going clear everybody out. Don't come if you're going to cause mayhem, knock your own defenders out of the way and cause uncertainty. In some respects, the defender, as long as you've got some kind of certainty, whether your keeper comes all the time or he doesn't, even if he doesn't come for too much, at least you know when that cross is on its way in, right, about me, me man, the person next to me, me teammate, we've got to go and deal with it. Unless it's an obvious one, float towards the
that
keeper.
That was one of Banks' things. He told the people, I think he told, actually it was the Pats defenders, it's like the 18-yard box, don't worry about happening this, this is my area. Yeah. I'll come for everything, I'll punch stuff here, I'll catch it, whatever needs to be done.
Yeah.
But I will dominate
in an ideal scenario, any cross in the box, keeper comes and collect it. But if that's not his strength in you, don't just come for the sake of it. Because it's expected of you and actually cause mayhem within your own penalty
box. That's fair enough. Yeah, no, that makes sense. That's a good defence of that, actually. So that's our news round done. I did mention we're going to be talking to Paul Keoghan after 8 o'clock. He's an Irish Heart Foundation ambassador, a former Paralympian, a really impressive, inspirational figure. And he's involved in the Show Some Heart This Valentine's Day campaign, which is aiming to raise money for the Irish Heart Foundation. And you can support the campaign at irishheart.ie/donate. Now we're talking Manchester United against PSG next.
Off the ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.